From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made 2 weeks from today, April 22nd, and that is Earth Day. You're probably thinking that it's going to go down a little bit differently this year. In some ways, that's true, but in many other ways, the people working on climate action are working harder than ever. There's a lot to be done, and despite the pandemic, well, actually, really, with the pandemic, they view this as an opportunity. So listeners, if you are finding yourself with maybe a little bit more time during the day, everyone's situation is different. We understand that. But if you find yourself mostly at home, maybe with a little bit more time, or just wondering, you know, what you want to spend a little bit more time on, and maybe you've been thinking, I've always wanted to get involved in a cause. I've always wanted to learn how to get involved in climate action. And this might be a chance to learn about what our guests are doing. And so let me go ahead and bring in our guests now. On the line with us is Abby McHugh-Griffith, who's the executive director of the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. I have no doubt you haven't stopped your work during this pandemic, Abby. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Never stop, Evan.
I know. Renee Singh is with us, a board member for the Rochester People's Climate Coalition and the executive director for the New York Youth Climate Leaders. Renee, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Evan?
Well, under the circumstances, we're all hanging in there. Calvin Eaton is the executive director of 540 West Main Commune University. Calvin, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Hi, Evan. I'm hanging in there.
Yeah.
Good to be here.
Yeah, I hear that. And Katie Wright, our next guest is a volunteer for the Citizens Climate Lobby, and only because I haven't seen her in person, and it's my first real good chance to meet her, I have to ask Katie how you want me to pronounce your last name. Hi, Katie.
Hi, how are you? Rigg.
Katie Rigg. It's great to have you, yeah. and thanks for taking the time to be with us. Listeners, let me also say right off the top here, we typically have Governor Andrew Cuomo's daily news briefing at around 11 or 11:30. It was scheduled in that hour today, and then the governor did an abrupt change. He's going to be on around 12:30, and we are committed to carrying that live. We do suspect that might have been related to him kind of ceding a little bit of the stage for Senator Bernie Sanders in his live announcement of his ending of his presidential campaign, which just happened. But you will hear the governor coming up. So let's squeeze a lot in here, and I'll start with you, Abby. Earth Day is 2 weeks away, and unlike a lot of events, Earth Day is not canceled. So tell me what you want the community to know about what's going on there.
Yeah, Earth Day could never be canceled. This is a particularly special one, too, because it's the 50th anniversary of the first Earth Day. But all the events that had been planned in the community have been moved online, or some will be postponed till later in the year. But we'll still be celebrating from home and invite people to join us in that.
And do you feel like, Abby, as I mentioned off the top, for people who are interested in getting involved in a cause, that this may actually be a moment that people can sort of take a breath and then hook up with you guys?
You know, I do. I don't want to be naive or Pollyanna.
Sure, I take it.
At all. And also, you know, not to diminish the seriousness of the COVID-19 pandemic, but we are seeing some really interesting things happening with this drastic change in our lives that really can inform our work on climate. Obviously, you know, we don't want to reduce emissions in the way that we are reducing them right now, but that doesn't change the fact that global emissions are down dramatically. So there are lessons to be learned. Maybe we can all get a little more used to working from home, those sorts of things. But there's also just real opportunity as we think about ramping the economy back up to think about how we can maybe use green jobs and, you know, some of the infrastructure work that needs to be done to get us back up and running again.
All right. So because we may be a little limited, here's what I want to do. I want to ask all four of our guests to let our listeners know about initiatives, about things that are happening that either they can be involved with or they should be aware of, especially as we move towards Earth Day. But there is a lot. And Abby, as I look down the list of things that you and I were sort of discussing via email leading up to this conversation, you know, you sent a list. We can talk about all of them. You said, most importantly, you're in the early stages of convening a formal climate-focused collective impact initiative for the 9-county region we're in, and you've been doing a lot of outreach to community leaders as part of that. How's that going?
It's really exciting and interesting. You know, we have learned, though, that there's not widespread understanding amongst community leaders about why climate change is an important, urgent local issue and what the corresponding solutions are. So we're really in this stage of just convening stakeholders to get that baseline, you know, get us all on the same page. Why do we need to do this? Why do we need to do it now? And what does it actually mean to do it? So I want to make sure you have time for all the other guests, but would love to talk to you in gross detail about that at some other point.
Okay, I take that point. And I think that for all listeners, whether you're in government or not, wondering how climate impacts you locally is an important question to answer, especially for policymakers. Calvin Eaton is the executive director of 540 West Main, holding two online workshops on intersectional environmental justice. They're coming up April 11th, April 22nd. And Calvin, obviously, this is an issue that matters every day of the year. But what we are now seeing in this country is is a disproportionate number of black citizens dying of COVID and being infected by COVID. And almost certainly some of that is due to environmental factors there. How much do you see the pandemic connected to the question of environmental justice, Calvin?
Well, I see it always connecting. Environmental justice is social justice is a moniker that we've taken up. And I think what we're seeing now with the pandemic and the national conversation around inequity being emphasized right now, especially or highlighted specifically during this time, it really helps us to appreciate that. You know, I've been hearing some great sort of just social one-liners that we all might be experiencing the same storm, but we're all in very much different boats. And based on our levels of privilege and other factors, different communities are experiencing even this global pandemic in very different ways. We see that with individuals in the refugee community, Latino community, the inequities that were already existent in our healthcare are now disproportionately impacting the most marginalized members of our communities. And it's just really been very sad to see. I'm very interested to see sort of what conversations continue to come from this, because these are all conversations that folks across, you know, the spectrum have been having for many decades now. And now when we're in this very crushing pandemic, you know, to see the effects of it in real time has really been difficult to experience and also to witness.
How do listeners, if they want to sign up for April 11th or April 22nd for those workshops, how do they do that, Calvin?
Yeah, so they can go to our website, 540westmain.org. We have an online classes tab, or you can go to 540westmain.eventbrite.com. We've shifted all of our classes to virtual learning, of course, for the foreseeable future. So we've been really excited to convert our usual in-person conversations to webinars and online classes.
Who do you have doing the heavy lifting of teaching those seminars on April 11th and April 22nd?
Yeah, so we, before all of this started, we had been training individuals from our communities who are really vested in sustainability, climate change. I've been working with folks in RPCC and others. So for Saturday's class, we have Haley Farrington, who is with the Genesee, I'm losing the I think like Climate Council, I want to say, or
okay.
Environmental Council.
Genesee Regional Planning Council.
There you go.
There we go. Genesee Regional Planning Council. Thank you, Abby. And actually, so Haley is one of our environmental justice facilitators now. We had a training a couple months ago where we brought a collective of climate activists together at 540 West Main and really sort of help them to understand our anti-racism and social justice framework, but utilizing their areas of expertise to be the facilitators of this particular class and future classes, because it's really the content expertise that they bring, that people like Abby bring, are really what highlight how different communities working on many different issues can always have a intersectional lens to the work that they're doing, because it's so important that not only are different groups of people represented in terms of the representation, but also that people understand that the environmental racism and impacts of environmental issues do not impact all of our communities in the same way. And that's really an important lens that we try to teach the community at 540 West Main.
540westmain.org to learn more about the upcoming online workshops. One of the towns in our region that's been sort of a hotspot for a lot of activity and a lot of movement lately has been Penfield. And Katie Rigg is going to single-handedly put electric school buses in Penfield, I've read. Is that correct, Katie?
Oh, that's not true. That's not true.
but I know there's an effort underway, so that's just one example. What's going on there?
Well, I think you had Al Hibner and Megan Meyer on a few weeks ago and talking about community choice aggregation. And so, you know, we're trying to get clean electricity for Penfield, and we're always looking for more people to join in that effort. So if you have clean electricity, what do you do with clean electricity? Move to electrify everything, and including school buses. And so there's a group of us that kind of jumped in with Mothers Out Front, who have been leading a national campaign on electric school buses. And so we've been going to workshops and learning a lot about it and reading about the RTS program that they were going to plan to roll out this summer with electric transit buses. But that, I think, has been pushed off a little bit. But a few parents and I are working together to try to talk to the superintendent about maybe moving in that direction. So the technology's getting close, and certainly we can be working on the infrastructure while the Penfield is working to rebuild its bus garage in the next couple of years. And so we're hoping that they take into account the possibility of moving forward with electric school buses.
So, Katie, as a volunteer, as a volunteer for CCL, if listeners are thinking, you know, I'd love to get involved, and absolutely, I would love to see a fleet of electric buses in my community, in my town, or I'd love to see community choice. I'd love to see these other issues happening. How do you suggest people get involved, and what do you think is actually achievable coming up here?
Well, actually, Abby started to talk about it a few minutes ago regarding the effort at the nine counties of the Finger Lakes area, that we are trying to get a program going called Color Your Community Green, which is kind of activating people who really do want to jump in and get involved and become leaders in their community for programs like CCA, for EV school buses, for passing a municipal resolution, for carbon cashback, the Energy Innovation Dividend Act, state-level action, all those things. So we're hoping that they can sort of find the ways to do that by going to the RPCC website. And we're sort of building out that framework right now, working with a number of communities like Irondequoit, Pittsford, Penfield. We're all sort of Fairport, another great example. We're sort of up and running, sort of, but looking for structure, and we're talking about that. So if anybody out there is looking to join that program, I'd say reach out to RPCC and we'll pull you in. We'd love to have more voices.
Abby, you want to add anything about Color Your Community Green?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, this was originally inspired by Color Bright and Green, which has been around for a while and has more recently really switched their attention to focusing on climate more exclusively. And that idea of having the, you know, citizen action team, municipally based citizen action team that can push forward those climate solutions that only can be implemented at the municipal level. Some can be implemented, you know, nationally, some can be implemented at the state level. Some things really have to be implemented right there in your town or village. So this is addressing that and providing, you know, as we build out this collective impact structure, which is really about facilitating cross-sector collaboration, which we will need to, implement these solutions in a robust way and in a timely way. But so the community leaders who are going to be sitting at the steering committee table for that We want to make sure that the decisions they're making are informed by the community, informed by the voices of, you know, the residents who have to live with their decisions. So this Color Your Community Green structure is to facilitate the development of those teams, help them move forward a little faster. You know, I know when I got started in this work a few years ago, there was a whole lot of kind of flailing and trying to figure out what the heck should I do initially. And so we're looking to cut that learning curve down for people and really direct them to what are the solutions that are going to make sense and what are the pathways to move those forward. And then as we, you know, again, move forward with this collective impact thing, which is going to be a multi-year process, we want to make sure that there's accountability also for, you know, the goals that these community leaders set, that there are voices in the community saying, hey, have you done that yet? And so this is all kind of part of the overarching vision of how we are going to transition our entire region to clean energy in a timely fashion that aligns with what the climate science tells us we need to do.
2 weeks from 2020 Earth Day, we're talking to Abby McHugh Griffith, the executive director of the Rochester People's Climate Coalition, Calvin Eaton, executive director of 540 West Main Community University. Katie Rigg is a volunteer for the Citizens Climate Lobby. And in a moment, I'm going to bring in Radesh Singh, who is the executive director of the New York Youth Climate Leaders. A note to our listeners, when the governor speaks, we will take it live. He was supposed to be on at about 11 this morning, and he bumped it last minute to 12:30. So we've been trying to just roll with that as best we can for you. It might be a little abrupt as we move to the governor. Our guests are aware of that, and they know that we mean them no rudeness and that we appreciate their time. We're all just sort of rolling with it here. So, but because that's going to happen, let me do it now what I often do towards the end here. Calvin, you mentioned 540westmain.org is the best way to get in touch, to sign up for classes. Anything else you want people listening to know about how to get in touch with you?
No, that's it. And on my website, it directs you right to our emails. Everything is online and virtual now, so our website is the best way to reach out to us.
Okay. Abby, Rochester People's Climate Coalition.
Certainly our website, rocpcc.org, would be a good place to visit. You can sign up for our newsletter there. And definitely also follow us on social media, because right now we have a Climate Action from Your Sofa series going on. So for people who are stuck at home looking to take action, that's a good way to plug in.
That's awesome. Climate Action from the Sofa. Follow along with that. I mean, you know, we laugh, but that's a great idea. And frankly, some people, not all, we understand everybody's circumstances are different, but that's a great opportunity. So very cool stuff. Katie Rigg, volunteer for the Citizens Climate Lobby. Where would you direct people?
To our website, citizensclimatelobby.org.
All right.
And join up. We'd love to have you.
All right. Radesh Singh is with us as well. And first of all, tell us a little bit about the work of the New York Youth Climate Leaders.
Yeah, sure. Actually, we have some quite exciting news. Just today, officially, we got our 32nd sponsor for the Fossil Fuel Divestment Act, which directs the state's Common Retirement Fund, which includes the pension funds for all public workers in our state. Our 32nd sponsor in the Senate, which is actually a majority in the Senate. And if officially passed the Senate, it would move on to the Assembly. And if it does pass the Assembly and it is signed by the governor, it would direct approximately $12 billion worth of public assets to be divested away from the fossil fuel industry. So we've been working on this campaign for now 4 or 5 months, and 350.org, who have been spearheading this campaign along with international divestment campaigns, has been working on this campaign for nearly 8 years now. So,
how are you guys doing with transitioning to essentially online organizing in this pandemic time?
Well, we are pretty much all under 20, so it's been quite an easy transition.
Yeah, easy for you, man. It's in your bones.
Yes. No, it's actually been quite an easy transition in terms of organizing. Zoom and Slack have been very, very helpful with communication. It's, as you said, it's kind of in our blood, so it's been a very easy kind of on-off switch for us.
When you talk about the Fossil Fuel Divestment Act, what's the possible impact, Radesh, of that? I mean, again, that's a sort of a phrase that people hear, but make it as tangible as you can.
Yeah, definitely. So as you know, the fossil fuel industry has been having many either private equity firms or even public assets receiving investments in that, such as the Common Retirement Fund. And a really effective way to effectively stigmatize the actions of the fossil fuel industry is to divest, which means basically removing your investments and assets in the fossil fuel industry and reinvesting it in other industries or even into renewable energy in order to further incentivize the expansion of clean energy infrastructure in your area.
What do you want people to know about, you know, getting more involved with what you're doing here? I mean, I know you said most of you are under 20. Well, there's a lot of students at home right now, and they're doing their best, and their families are doing their best to make sure that their education continues. But this is a time where we could see a little flexibility, a little creativity. What would you hope students are able to do right now?
Definitely. So at first, you can follow us on social media or Facebook at NY2CL. We're actually on April 21st, the day before Earth Day, we're hosting a youth-led lobby day. But this is open to youth and adults alike. If you're interested in signing up to help push for the Fossil Fuel Divestment Act, along with other state-level legislation, you can sign up on our social media pages. The links are in our social media pages.
All right, so information there from Radesh. And again, if you're a parent of students or family of students who are just kind of hanging in and trying to do their best at home, maybe a great chance to sort of explore this kind of work. And there's obviously an educational component. There's a community component to it. So maybe a great opportunity there. Thomas writes to the program to say, Evan, just wanted to mention that the Pachamama Alliance is making available Introduction to Drawdown via Zoom. People can go to Pacha, P-A-C-H-A, PachaPeopleRock.org to view the schedule and register for any number of Zoom drawdown introductions. If I remember correctly, Abby McHugh Griff, a drawdown is the 80 or 100, is that Paul Hawkins' ideas on what we can do in our community and in our world to reduce climate impact? Is that right?
That is exactly right. And I should mention again on our website the full menu, the Earth Month menu of options. And those Pachamama, if you want these specific dates and times and information, the website link, you can also find it there.
Okay, cool stuff there. Check the schedule if you want. Adam wants to know if you're in your work with local governments, if things have changed since the last election in Monroe County. I think Adam is talking about the change in leadership at the county level. Have you noticed a difference in openness, any policy plans? Abby McHugh Griffa.
It has changed, yes. You know, the county is moving forward with very concrete steps. They're forming a climate advisory board. They've issued an RFP. It's out right now. To hire some consultant to work with them to create a climate action plan. So it's really exciting the pace at which things are now moving forward at the county level.
Are you expecting that will continue to happen, not just in this county, but town by town and regardless of politics, or is there generally a partisan line?
No, actually I had a really encouraging conversation yesterday, talking about, you know, our agriculture community, farmers in the area. And, you know, they're generally thought of as being, you know, leaning a little more conservative. But, you know, the person I was speaking to, who would definitely know, said that, you know, every farmer in our region recognizes that climate change is a problem and is looking to do something about it. So, you know, I think outlying rural areas, the surrounding communities, there's movement happening. And I do expect we'll see more of that, both because, there is regulation now. We have policy in New York State that says we're going to have to be moving forward with these things. It will be interesting to see, you know, with this COVID-19, has this interrupted progress? Is this going to stall progress, or could this even accelerate progress? I think we really have some critical decisions to make right now, you know, as a region, as a state, certainly nationally, but that's more up in the air. How do we want to prioritize climate given all of the other challenges we have, and how could we possibly even use it as a way of stimulating the economy and getting us back going?
All right. As we wait for the governor, we're going to squeeze in as much as we can with our guests. Mary writes to us and says, Evan, can you discuss the role of high blood pressure when it comes to racial differences in COVID cases, especially when controlled by ACE inhibitors? There's research showing this is a significant risk factor because of how the virus connects with human tissue, along with other metabolic diseases. Are there any demographic data in ACE inhibitor use, other metabolic disease information among ethnic communities? I don't know the answer to that offhand, though what we are starting to see, and I'll let Calvin jump in to see if he has any other data here, we're starting to see more government entities across the country release more information on demographics as we look at cases. Calvin, you want to add to that?
I can't specifically speak to the question directly because it's out of my area of purview, but I know we do know that the African American community it has higher risk to things like diabetes and high blood pressure. Many reasons because of racial segregation and just the propensity of Black and Brown communities to be to have less access to healthcare, to have less money in general. So I think when you start to put all of these factors together again, we're really seeing that when you have a virus hit communities that were already very susceptible to these types of illnesses are hit even harder. So, you know, living off, I mean, we're seeing in New York City and certain communities and areas of New York City, Black and Brown people are living in closer proximity, so there's less chance for them to even social distance. And so it's just really important for us to sort of think about all of these types of issues and how they have a disparate impact on different communities in all of our neighborhoods.
We do know that Monroe County is getting closer to releasing more data, and so we'll share as much as we can, Mary, when we have it. I would also direct you to The Atlantic, a piece that was just published last night by Ibram X. Kendi. The piece is called What the Racial Data Show, The Pandemic Seems to Be Hitting People.
It's challenging. Of course, renters don't have a lot of power over their housing situations often. And when it's the landlord who's responsible for making the upgrades, but the tenant's the one who pays the energy bills, the landlord doesn't necessarily have a lot of incentive to, do the right thing. So this is not an easy project in any stretch of the, imagination. But we do feel it's critically important given the high percentage of rental property in the city. And this really actually kind of gets back to the caller's question, not specifically about blood, pressure, but in terms of the health connection, mm-hmm. right? Like, what are the similarities between COVID-19 and climate? I think the biggest one, perhaps the biggest one, is that they are both enormous public health crises that do require that global to local response. They do require bold leadership. And of course, they require respect for science. And we need to be making decisions based on science. So there's a lot of indicators with rentals, with housing in particular, that the impact on your health is significant. The where you live has all sorts to do with how healthy you are. And in the city of Rochester, again, we have, it's a threat and opportunity at the same time.
All right, Abby, Calvin, Katie, Radesh, thank you to all of you. And we'll go now live to Governor Cuomo's Daily Briefing.